for inviting me to join this conference, and also for inviting an anthropological session to the conference with anthropological perspectives. This is very useful for an anthropologist like me to discuss my research with a group of Islamic studies as here. Actually, I form part of a larger research group. We are six people from Sweden, Norway, and Denmark studying Shia Islam in various places and with various sources based on theology, history of ideas, on statistics, on religious studies, and on anthropology. And my own contribution to that research group is very much the anthropological approach and contribution, and this is what I want to convey here and discuss with you here. Basically, in my paper, which I'm going to present, I will tell you the story of one of my informants. I have anonymized him under the name Ali. And in particular, I will focus on the uncertainty of the mukallid in the concept of Marja'iyya. So the title of my paper is Marja'iyya from Below, Anthropological Approaches to the Study of Religious Authority, which is also basically the research group is focusing on Marja'iyya from various perspectives. So I'm going to read this story of Ali with an anthropological approach. Ali is searching for a new Marja. Since Sheikh Mirza Hassan died 10 years ago, he, as a follower of the Sheikhia line in Kuwait, has felt a void. And I should say that Kuwait is where I did most of my fieldwork for this project. Ali now waits for a new Marja to announce himself in the Sheikhia line, but while that has not happened, he travels to many Husseiniyah and religious groups in search of an authority to follow. It is confusing not to have a Marja. There are many things you need to know, he explains to me. Ali, who is in his early 60s, is worried both for himself and for others who now have no Marja to emulate, and he has proposed himself as a representative, a wakil or wakila kas in his case, for different Marjas so that people can pay their homes through him. Thus, he currently travels to many places in Kuwait in order to help others with this issue. I follow Ali on these uncertain travels in Kuwait and, metaphorically speaking, in the landscape of Marja'iyya to better understand the search for a religious authority to emulate and the importance of Marja'iyya to the Mukallids, the lay Shia Muslims. This is the topic and perspective of this paper. More generally, I will investigate how a perspective on Marja'iyya from below, from the perspective of the Mukallid, may enrich the understanding of Marja'iyya. This perspective is inspired by recent propositions to enhance the anthropology of Islam, which has been forwarded by many authors, among others Gabriele Maranci in 2008, and recently in a reader edited by Jens Kreinert from 2012, and also the concept of ethnographies of Islam, which is the title of an anthology edited and with a chapter by, among others, the researcher of British Shia Muslims, Catherine Spillman-Poots from 2012. Not only will I suggest anthropological approaches may strengthen the understanding of the lay and everyday perspective of the Mukallid and on Marja'iyya from below, it will also address the ambiguities and uncertainties of Muslim life within the framework of Marja'iyya. To this end, I will add anthropological approaches may strengthen a focus on the spiritual and cosmological aspect of every life and lay Shia thought, rather than a conventional focus on identity and power politics, which has also inspired much research on Shia Muslims, in particular in the Arab world, as you all know, I'm sure. For Ali and many other informants, it seemed not so important whether his marja to come will be a good community leader and speaker for the rights of the Shia minority group in Kuwait. More important is that he must be a good Muslim with a solid knowledge of Islam and to some, perhaps even with personal experiences of seeing the Mahdi or other imams. I first met Ali at the Husseiniyah Shirasiyah in Bin El Agar, historically one of the first suburbs to emerge outside the walls of old Kuwait City and a cultural center for Shia Muslims with several Husseiniyahs. It was only a week into my fieldwork, and I was looking for people who could introduce me to the field of Shia in Kuwait. Outside the Husseiniyah, some men gathered most nights, and I had been sitting with them, sipping tea and small talking to get a feel of what was going on. This Saturday night was the first of my visits there with a sermon in the Husseiniyah, and more people joined us at the benches outside before the sermon would start. Ali was one of the men I had not seen before, and he was immediately remarkable because he was the only one in this crowd to wear a black bisht over the typical white disjasha, what the Kuwaiti name for the male Arab dress. I had been to other Husseiniyas at this point, but had only seen the bisht worn by sheikhs, the preachers, but unlike Ali, they would also typically wear imama to signify their religious education and status. Ali himself wore a white khitrat headscarf as most other men, and he was not a sheikh. He did, however, clearly have a special role or status among these men, greeting everybody, and as soon as he learned about my interest in the Shia in Kuwait, he said in English, "Maybe I can help." Not only because of his English skills, which I must admit was a great help, and which he owed to his few years as a young student in the UK, training to become a teacher in Kuwait, but primarily because of his deep involvement with the religious milieu of Kuwait, and, as it would later appear, because he was searching for religious knowledge and certainty of Marja'iyya lines as well as I was. Already on the bench outside this Husseiniyya, Ali confided that he was new to this place, as was I. He used to go to a Husseiniyya inside old Kuwait city, the Husseiniyya Jafariyya, one of the grandest Husseiniyyas in Kuwait and a well-established center for the Sheikhiyya line of Shiism. However, as mentioned above and as Ali explained to me here, the spiritual leader of the Sheikhiyya, Mirza Hassan, who you might know as Mirza Hassan al-Hayri al-Ikaki, died in 2003, and his son Mirza Abdullah had not yet taken over the leadership. We call this Marja, Ali explains, since I had not yet introduced this as the main focus of my research. Anxious about the lack of leadership and the uncertainty of when and whether Mirza Abdullah would be ready to assume the role of Marja, Ali had started to visit other places and Husseiniyas to see if he could have an alternative Marja with whom to seek advice in religious matters. Like others who I met later, Ali had in particular found this Husseiniyya appealing, following the Marja'iyya of Sayyid Sadiq al-Shirazi in Qum, a brother of the late Sayyid Muhammad al-Shirazi, who had himself founded this Husseiniyya and the Shiraziyya community in Kuwait when he was residing here after leaving his religious institution in Kabbalah due to the threat of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Muhammad al-Shirazi had later moved on to Qum to join and not least to affect the Islamic revolution in Iran, where he ended up representing a strong alternative to the idea of Wilayat al-Faqih as envisioned by Ayatollah Khomeini, as you probably know. In present Kuwait, the Husseiniyya was led by Sayyid Ahmed al-Shirazi, a son of Sayyid Sadiq and his representative in Kuwait. Ali had met several times with Sayyid Ahmed in person. He liked him, and he had therefore started going to this Husseiniyya rather than the one in Kuwait City. Sayyid Ahmed was also the preacher this Saturday night, and while I was talking to Ali, the Sayyid arrived in the Husseiniyya. "We should stand," explained Ali, and also the other people in the small front court rose up to respectfully greet the preacher. Some approached him and kissed him on his forehead. There was clearly a great respect for this man, which added to his formal and charismatic appearance in fine robes, bisht, and because a Sayyid, black imama. A group of primarily young people followed him as he entered the front court and went on to the inner hall of the Husseiniyya. Ali invited me to join him inside, and he asked some others if my participation, as a non-Muslim, could be accepted. I was happy to participate. The hall of the Husseiniyya was soon full, as more than 100 people showed up for Sayyid Ahmed's sermon. His speech was creating deep emotions, preparing the audience for Muharram, which was only a few days from its beginning. People were crying, and the soft and low voice of Sayyid Ahmed seemingly intensified emotions. When the Sayyid spoke about Fatima, who had beaten herself on her cheeks when learning about the fate of Imam Hussein, many in the crowd also themselves beat their own cheeks. After the sermon, I was invited to speak to Sayyid Ahmed, waiting together with others to have the chance of a personal conversation. I explained to him that I had come to Kuwait for a few months to learn about the Shia. He was not impressed. "How do I think that I can learn about Shia Islam in a few months? Shia Islam is based on the Holy Quran and 1,000 books of hadith, and it will take years to study all of this." But he encouraged me to study this body of knowledge because I should rather study Islam as such than study the practices of Muslims. "This is the problem. I want to know about Shia Muslims, their practices and interpretations, and what religion means to them, but Sayyid Ahmed and all his and his followers and other followers believes that the practices of Muslims are not necessarily in line with true Islam, and I should rather study true Islam." I tried to explain to the Sayyid that he and others have studied Islam for many years, like you, and know Islam very well, but that I would rather understand Islam through the people in Kuwait. "The problem, as he and others see it, is that religion is perfect, but people are not." He mentioned Imam Ali as an example. He was the perfect leader, the best example of a human being, and we can follow his example, but we cannot be like Imam Ali. There is nobody like him. Therefore, I should study Imam Ali to learn from him, not the imperfect Muslims who follow Imam Ali. We departed on this note, and although we agreed to meet again, we never did. My interest, and the argument I forward here, is to study the imperfect Muslims, the Mukallids, rather than what Sayyid Ahmed justly refers to as true religion. And I should emphasize that it is not me who say that Muslims are imperfect, it is my informants, the Muslims themselves. What I find interesting is the recognition of the individual Muslim, lay or learned, that he or she is imperfect, and that true Islam is difficult to grasp and to live by. I am therefore more interested in people like Ali, who out of anxiety has left his former religious community and is now searching for a new because he needs a marja, a religious authority with whom he can seek advice and guidance in a contemporary life full of questions, deviations, and temptations to not do the right thing. Ali, in this way, is like most people, although he has apparently taken it on himself to actively find a solution to his religious anxiety and is perhaps more openly searching for directions than many other people. Ali also explicitly knows how it is not only for his own sake that he is searching for the right path and a new marja to follow, but also, and not least, for the young people who must be in deeper troubles than himself. Ali has for most of his life learned from the former marja and can still rest on many of his directives, whereas young people must find a leader now, one who is alive and who they can go to. It is important for the young people coming of age in modern society to have somebody to guide them and to turn to with questions of religious and moral affairs. So Ali travels to various Husseiniyah both in his own search and to talk to his peers about the possibilities of Marja'iyah in the void of a Shaykhiyah religious leader. I traveled with him every other day going to a new place together in my own search for an understanding of the meaning and importance of Marja'iyah. My ethnographic interest in lay perspectives and the uncertainties of the ordinary Muslims made me go with Ali as a key informant rather than with Sayyid Ahmed, who could have taught me a lot about what he, as a mujtahid, would forward as true Islam. One uncertainty among the former Shaykhiyah followers, former or not former, is whether Mirza Abdullah, the expected marja to come, who is still relatively young, around 50 years, will ever feel ready to announce his Marja'iyah. This may depend on many things: his studies and credentials among the ulama in Iran, where he studies, and his personal ambitions, which seem at the time more concerned with the world of business. Others suggested that Iran prevented Mirza Abdullah to come to Kuwait as a marja, since Iran only allows their own marjas, as one informant said. And yet others argued that to be a marja, Mirza Abdullah would need to have a vision, Ruya, of the Mahdi, and who the Mahdis are in the theory of this institution meant to represent. An informant who still sees the Shaykhiyah as his primary religious affiliation and who often visits their mosque in Husseiniyah in old Kuwait City explained to me how Ruya was necessary to become a Mahdi, and to his knowledge Mirza Abdullah had not yet had such a Ruya. This divine acknowledgement of a candidate's readiness to become Mahdi is of course by nature uncertain, not least in the interpretation of the Mukallid. Has he or has he not had a Ruya? Does someone claim to have Ruya who has not? Will the Mahdi really appear? And how can one be sure that it is the Mahdi? Such spiritual concerns, which may or may not be in correspondence with textbook Islam, I was always saying Orthodox Islam, can be documented by ethnographic methods and approaches, and they may address a scholarly focus on spirituality and cosmology that more conventional focuses on Marja'iyah, theology and politics more rarely entail. Anthropological approaches to Islam are about Muslims and not least the life and practices of lay Muslims, and this focus may also address alternative types of knowledge and concerns. Ali, my key informant in this paper, did not agree that Mirza Abdullah would need to have Ruya to become Marja, but felt that he did need to sit with him in person to know that he had the capabilities to be his marja. Anthropologists of Islam must pay close attention to these varieties of interpretations and of practices among Muslims. These varieties are what shows the reality and complexity of Muslim life. While some Muslims argue that ruya is necessary, others may find this irrelevant to the qualities of a religious leader, and some may even find ruya claims not trustworthy or even bizarre. Ali did, however, believe in Ruya and Mahdi visions. Actually, he might himself have seen the Mahdi once he was on pilgrimage to Mecca. Right here, right there at the Kaaba, he saw a man performing salawat. And according to Ali, salawat is not usually done at the Kaaba, at least not unpunished by Saudi authorities. But the guard near the scene, who definitely registered the salawat, did not take any action, and therefore Ali believes it must have been the Mahdi. Was it the Mahdi or not? We'll never know, and this basic uncertainty is a significant aspect of any belief system. For belief without doubt is the same as knowledge, as Matthijs Pilkman has noted in his recent study on doubt, and specifically maybe in Shia Islam. Scholars of Shia Islam may be able to explain away such uncertainties with reference to proper sources, but to many lay Muslims, uncertainty are part and parcel of their daily life and religious imagination. Marja'iyya, I suggest, is a particular institution of this uncertainty, since it is rooted in the uncertainty of the lay Muslim, and this uncertainty is accentuated as the question of who is the right marja and what is the right path is an open question. This is the case for many Kuwaiti Shia today, as there are several potential marjas to choose from, and it is not least the case for those who feel a void in marja'iyya, as for Ali, who I have followed here in his search for a new marja after the death of his former Shaykhia leader. Anthropological approaches to the study of Islam, in this case Shia Islam and Marja'iyya, may enable us to grasp this uncertainty both by way of its grounded fieldwork methodology and by way of the perspectives which come out of this. There are many possible perspectives which may come out of an anthropological approach. In this paper, I have focused on the uncertainty of the Mukallid, an uncertainty which must therefore be understood as a central aspect of Marja'iyya and perhaps of both Muslim and human life. Thank you.